Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Sounding Jewish podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Samantha Cooper, and each episode presents my conversations with musicologists, ethnomusicologists, and sound study scholars who specialize in the music and sound of Jewish experience. I am absolutely delighted to welcome you to today's episode
featuring Dr. Helena Goldberg. Thank you so much for agreeing to speak with me on today's episode of the Sounding Jewish podcast. I would love to give you the chance to introduce yourself.
Let me first thank you, Sam, for inviting me to be on the podcast. I have listened to some of your previous podcasts and they are fantastic. So it's a pleasure to be a part of it. My name is Helena Goldberg. I am a professor of musicology in the Jacobs School of Music at Indiana University, where I also serve as the director of the Barnes Russian and East European Institute and also of the Polish Studies Center. I am affiliated with several other units, including the Slav Department and the Barnes Jewish Studies Program.
Perfect. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Poland. I grew up in what was at the time the second largest city in Poland, Łódź, as we call it in Polish, Lodz, as it is called in Yiddish. And I was born there. I also learned through later research that my ancestors lived in that city pretty much going back to its beginnings in the 19th century.
Can you tell me about one of your earliest encounters with Jewish music or sound and why this was such a formative experience for you?
I grew up listening to Jewish music through my parents. I grew up in a home where there was a great sense of Yiddishkeit. My parents spoke Yiddish to each other most of the time, especially when they didn't want me to understand. And they spoke Polish most of the time to me, but affection came in Yiddish. And songs sometimes also came in Yiddish. So I heard those songs. I later discovered that many of them were actually from Yiddish theater. And perhaps those were the earliest memories that I have of Jewish music. I also have memories of Yiddish theater itself. Almost next to our apartment, really around the corner, was a theater that was built in the late 50s specifically to serve Yiddish theater. By the time I came around, it had multi-purpose, but with some regularity, the Jewish theater would visit from Warsaw. And my parents would take me to those performances. So the one that I remember pretty vividly, maybe the earliest one, is the Tzvei Kunilemel and some songs from that Goldfaden play. Gedenk as Kunilemel, gewei bin ich als Kind. Ich mein as Kunilemel, bin ich noch a Zind. Var was kommt jetzt dat zweiter? Ois haben das geliebt. Sie is den Kunilemel, epes ananti. Men sagt mir as ich, bibi bin go nicht ich. Das is a schlechter Fall. Weil oi was ich, bibi bin go nicht ich. Tover. There were other experiences with Jewish music that I didn't know at the time were experiences with Jewish music. There were popular songs that went back to interwar period that continued to be revived in Polish popular music performed by ever new generations of singers. They were also some of the beloved songs of my parents, you know, interwar period, tangos and foxtrots. And I later discovered that they were composed by Jewish composers to lyrics of Jewish poets, and very often performed by Jewish singers and by Jewish bands. And that they had a central presence in Jewish community of interwar period.
Was there a particular moment when you decided you wanted to study Jewish music?
No.
No? Or an experience?
My educational path, my path in musicology was curving and turning and going in unpredictable directions. I actually started with the intent when I started in the US. I had 1 year of musicology at the university level in Poland before I left. But when I arrived in the US, it became pretty clear to me early on that I love early music. And I was heading toward a Renaissance dissertation. This is what I wanted to do. It was completely unexpected that I found my way to Chopin, or I should say, Chopin found his way to me. So I ended up writing a dissertation about Chopin and his musical and cultural context during the Warsaw period. During my archival research, I started to come across sources that were relevant to Jewish musical history or cultural constructions of Jewishness that came from non-Jewish sources. And I became really interested in them. There was a folder of for future research, which I encourage every young scholar to create, you know, the things that you are not going to be able to cram into your dissertation, and you should not, because you will be writing for 20 years, but there will be opportunities to go back and explore them. And I found a number of mentions of this sort in sources that immediately raised all kinds of questions in my mind. So at my first opportunity, I started to go kind of one by one to these sources. And then 2005, 2006, I had a Fulbright haze to do specifically Jewish topic research in Poland. And I had time to follow up on those threads. And that was really the beginning of my work on Jewish topics. So from then on, my scholarship kind of became bifurcated. I am continuing to work on Chopin and continuing to publish about Chopin's music and context. There are kind of threads that came from that are also important to me. For example, the presence of women in Chopin's circles and in the cultural milieus that I was studying through Chopin's music. And then in the other direction, thinking about how Jewish communities express themselves through music, especially in the period of modernity, starting really in the beginning of the 19th century through 1939.
Can you tell me a little bit about your scholarly trajectory? Where did you study? What was your experience like in graduate school?
So I started my education in my hometown in Łódź, and really because of my mother's love for music, I was encouraged right away when I started my first grade, or even before. I was actually in a kindergarten level class in a specialized music school. This is one of the good things that communists thought up. A network of specialized music schools that trained children, essentially K through 12, not just in instrumental instruction, but we had chorus and orchestra and music history and music theory, and we were growing up with other musicians, and it was absolutely wonderful.
Dziś pożegnać się już czas, zobaczyć się znowu nas, gramy bowiem przygód sto, niech nam żyje Kolar Gol, wiwat, wiwat, Kolar Gol, wiwat, wiwat, Kolar
So my mother wanted me to play the piano, so I was playing the piano very reluctantly. I loved the music. When I was told to go and practice, I actually would compose. But it gave me extraordinary foundation. So I graduated from a music school with love for music, with fantastic piano teachers whom I adored, especially my last piano teacher with whom I was for 6 years. Her name was Jadwiga Hertel, dedicated to this very resistant pianist who had a lot of spirit for the piano and zero desire to practice. And she inspired me actually to try to practice. So I graduated, and in the meantime, I became really interested in music history. And I am an omnivore. I will study anything in any discipline that piques my interest. So I loved the humanities. I loved history, I loved literature, I was becoming interested in art history. I didn't know it at the time, but musicology was kind of the natural place for me to land. I didn't have anybody who could really advise me on that, but I think my instinct was right. So I applied to the musicology department at the Warsaw University, and that's where I spent my first year. That first year also was the year Solidarity was formed. And it was a very tumultuous year. There were other organizations that worked together with Solidarity, representing the Polish farmers, representing the Polish students. I joined the Independent Student Union that was also on strike much of that year. And then I found myself outside of Poland, in Paris, when martial law was imposed in Poland in 81, and there was no reason to come back at that point. We know in hindsight that it was a relatively peaceful transition, that there were very few casualties, that people who were imprisoned were eventually released and allowed to rejoin the political discourse. But at the time, these were months and months where you got no news coming from Poland. Radio was blocked. Phone lines were blocked. When letters started to come from Poland a few months later, they were censored. I actually have some letters with things cut out of them. So I ended up coming to the US the following year, and I had a political refugee status. So I came on my own. My parents were in Poland. I didn't know anybody. And within a couple of months, I was back in school with the hopes to continue musicology.
Wow, that is quite a journey. Can you tell me a little bit about the Solidarity movement for those listeners who may be unfamiliar with Polish history?
So the Solidarity Movement was a labor union that came to existence in 1980 and basically requested seat at the table as a political power negotiating on behalf of the workers. There were earlier movements that came from among the Warsaw intelligentsia, university students, and they were also workers' movements, and they acted separately at various moments in Polish post-World War II history. But at that point, these movements came together to be a real force to reckon with, and the central government actually was forced to listen and sit at the table, and that finally happened. It was the beginning of the fall of the Soviet bloc as we knew it up till then.
So, can you tell me a little bit about what happened next once you'd arrived in the United States on refugee status? What did your life look like?
So I continued my studies. I started at Queen's College immediately, and I was working full time all the way through my time at QC and then into the doctoral program, which was at CUNY, at the Graduate Center of the City System. And I actually ended up graduating in a program. I might have been the only graduate of that program. It was a joint undergrad master's degree. So actually, within, I think it was 128 credits, I got a master's degree. And I was doing that while working full time. And I was exempting out of some undergraduate classes, and that allowed me the space to take graduate classes at that point. And then I went on to continue. So, yeah.
What was your experience like at the Graduate Center and during graduate school? And from those experiences, do you have any advice that you would offer to prospective students or new scholars who are thinking about studying something similar to you?
So the Graduate Center was, let's put it this way, Queen's College was a community because it was in the Outer Borough and people were more local. You could get a hold of the faculty fairly easily. There was a good connection with the faculty, and we had connection with each other. The Graduate Center, which is in Manhattan, has a very different feeling. Most people live outside of Manhattan. They dash in to take classes. They run to the outer boroughs or wherever they have their jobs. And the faculty, also many of them, do not live anywhere near. So they come in, teach a class, they are gone. This is, remember, this is before you could even have Zoom meetings with your faculty. So it was very disjointed. I had some really brilliant teachers, Leo Treitler, Alan Atlas, Charles Burkhardt, Carl Schachter, it really wonderful group of scholars, thinkers. But there was very little contact beyond the classroom. You were very much kind of on your own, with the exception of Carl Schachter, who loved his students and whose seminars very often ended with us walking over somewhere to a restaurant and continuing.
So it sounds like you were able to find mentorship and role models in unconventional places. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So there were some faculty who were actually not on my committee or not my advisors, who lent support in ways that they were able to. Ray Erickson, he was not my advisor, but he was my go-to person. And Ray and I continue to be friends till today. He was always there to encourage me. If there was something that he could help me with, he was always available. Ed Lerner, with whom I was supposed to do a Renaissance dissertation, and then I turned to something different, continued to support me, and we remained in touch as long as he was alive. But I also found mentors in places other than the academic environment. For example, when I started to go to Poland, I built my own community there. There was Professor Jerzy Gołoś, another fascinating man whose life was deeply impacted by the events of World War II. His father was in the Warsaw Uprising in 44 and had to leave Poland when the communist government came to power. So he actually went via England and ended up in the US and lived here for many years. And when communism ended in Poland, he returned to Poland. He was not technically a musicologist, he was a Slavicist technically, but he was the foremost organ expert in Poland. He wrote fantastic books on the history of Polish organ. He was true archival scholar, and he was regularly at the libraries of Warsaw. Each day was had different library assigned, and when I was working at the National Library, we would have our coffee once a week. And he was the one I could ask questions about this milieu, archival issues, terminological issues. We shared some bits of information that we were not able to follow on. For example, he's the one who first got me thinking about, was there really an organ in the Warsaw Progressive Synagogue? So it was wonderful to have a colleague who knew these particular materials, these archives, and with whom I could explore these issues. Later on, I met people such as Barbara Kuszebrat-Gimlet, who is fantastic. And as she was working, before the museum was even up, and as she was working on a museum in Warsaw, I was able to connect with her and learn from her. There are communities also of younger scholars that became really important to me in Poland. For example, Sylwia Jakubczyk-Ślęczka, who is in Krakow at the Jagiellonian University, she wrote a fantastic dissertation on Jewish music societies in Galicia, in the Austrian portion of Poland in the 19th and early 20th century. And I became a mentor to Sylvia, but I have also learned a ton from her work, and she has become a partner. So it's an interesting situation where people I mentor are also my mentors.
That's very special and a creative way of looking at it. I think we can make our connections in places we might not expect to. Given all of your disparate experiences, is there any advice that you would offer to prospective students or new scholars thinking about studying Jewish music today?
Well, there's the intellectual advice, and then there is a practical advice. The intellectual advice is there's so much still to be discovered there. They are just thinking about Poland, there are histories of communities to be written, for which I know there is archival material, or I suspect there is archival material. There are documents in Yiddish and in Polish and in Hebrew that remain unexplored and that can tell us stories about these communities. At the same time, there is the reality of the job market in the US. Because working on Jewish studies in music is an inherently interdisciplinary endeavor, young scholars find themselves kind of in between places. I have encouraged my advisees to position themselves in between places to be able to find home wherever they are wanted and wherever they can contribute. But it is the difficulty of finding a place where you are perceived as being too narrow to contribute to a particular department, I think, is something to be aware of. So my advice is definitely to position yourself as somebody who can do not just musicology, but also perhaps history and be hired by a history department or be in Jewish studies, but also prepare yourself to be a generalist, to be able to say, I can teach specialized courses on the topic that I love and I'm excited about, but if you need me to teach fill in the blank, I can pull this together and I can do it.
Yeah, personally speaking, I'm in exactly that situation now and preparing my first American Jewish literature and culture class. So I take that advice very much to heart. Pivoting a little bit, can you tell me about some of your most recently completed research projects and why you selected them and what has excited you most about them?
So I will go back to what I said before about being an omnivore. I am truly an interdisciplinary scholar, and I have come to embrace that and love it. Not only much of my own scholarship is interdisciplinary, but I have also ventured into areas that are not strictly musicology, but are Jewish studies where I collaborate with people from other disciplines. So an example of interdisciplinary project that I have done early on is the what became the digital project, the Jewish Lodge digital project that is available till today, that came about from an exhibit that I co-curated in Łódź in one of the museums, for which we got a nomination to the top award for museum exhibits in Poland. And to tell the story of the Jewish community in Łódź, we brought together social history, political history, cultural history, the history of music. And I was also able to capitalize on what I learned at home. Back to the music I heard, back to the walks around town where my parents pointed out places that were of significance to Jewish community, excavating the history of my own family to be able to tell the story of migrations that brought the Jewish community to Łódź, using a particular micro history to tell that larger story, tell the story of how Jewish communities transformed by understanding what were the professions in my own family that also allowed us to create micro history of how modernity changed the Jewish community as people moved from shtetl and smaller towns into this big industrial town.
Jewish, Polish, and German tenants lived next to each other. The relations between neighbors were mostly good. The Germans usually communicated with the Poles in Polish and in Yiddish too. My wife had a girlfriend who lived in the next building. Her building was number 8 and mine was 12. They could not live without each other. Ola spoke Yiddish. She sang Yiddish songs.
Ой, коморне зле, ой, коморне менше не скомзьой, на коморне я сидзе. Я не могу спать, а мой господа спите плать, за коморне, на коморне треба пейте ждать.
So this was an interdisciplinary project, and I continue with other interdisciplinary projects. The book that I co-edited with Nancy Sinkoff that was published a couple of years ago and this year received the Piazza Award for the best edited volume, the Chinchilla Award. That book is fully interdisciplinary. We wanted to tell the story of Jewish cities as we equipped among ourselves. Let's get the fiddler off the roof already. We wanted to get the narrative out of shtetl and get into bigger towns and the other big cities, not just Warsaw, because the way we imagine Jewish life in Poland, it is shtetl and it's Warsaw. And we wanted to bring these fascinating communities of Vilna and Lodz and Krakow and other places, Częstochowa, Lublin, all of those places had vibrant Jewish culture, cultures that are invisible into a conversation, each one of them with very different personalities. For example, Yiddish being the language of Vilna intelligentsia, Hebrew being and Polish being important in Krakow, immediately changes the flavor of the direction of culture. So we brought in historians and musicologists and literary scholars, and we were able to put together a narrative that was unknown. And these tangos and foxtrots that I grew up with became the heart of that narrative. In fact, the cover of the book is taken from sheet music of one of those tangos that my mother used to sing. And it's a tango sung by Jewish singers, written by Jewish artists about a Jewish girl from traditional community yearning to join modernity. So music kind of informs that book.
O mój wymarzony, o mój wytęsknione, nie wiesz o tym przecież ty, że w małym miasteczku za tobą ktoś wypłakał z oczu łzy, że biedna Rebeka w zamyśleniu czeka, aż przyjedziesz po nią sam i zabierzesz ją jako żonę swą.
So this was a book that came out a couple of years ago. This summer, 2025, Bożena Szelkross and I saw our book come out of Indiana University Press. And this is again an interdisciplinary volume. The Jewish Inn, which was a really important social and economic phenomenon in Poland in pre-18th century Poland. Its height really came in the late 18th century, and then the 19th century, so its continuation, but also waning, and then, of course, the Holocaust put an end to it. But it became an inspiration for artistic manifestation of the place, the space, the people involved, and especially the Jewish innkeeper, as imagined in Polish literature, for example, Jankiel in Mickiewicz's Pantadeusz. And I wrote a chapter about the inn and the Jewish inn and the Jewish innkeeper as it appears on the stage of Polish musical theater, especially in the ballet. So these are interdisciplinary projects, and I'm very much drawn to telling these stories with colleagues from other disciplines. And that's where my community, intellectual communities in Jewish studies, I work a lot with scholars who are interested in Polish Jewish cultures and history in the 19th and early 20th century. And much of my work ends at 1939 by design. This is not that I'm not interested in the story of the Holocaust. It's a very personal story for me. My parents were survivors. We lost the entire families on both sides. My grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. My mother was one of six and two of them survived. So, you know, it hits home very closely. But one thing that I always found striking is how they are remembered in the moment of their death. And it's almost, I felt like it's doing violence for the second time to them, that they have just become either numbers or piles of bodies, bones. And I wanted to bring back dignity to them. So the project in which I focus on the Jewish culture when it was at its most vibrant, or non-Jewish culture with Jewish participation, where people could not have imagined what is coming and were living their daily lives and were being creative and were engaging with cultural products and were worshiping. I want to capture that moment of that community and tell that story.
I find it really fascinating that so many of your projects are about homecoming, are about capturing and reviving very vibrant places, often of your childhood, about bringing these stories, some of which have to do with music, some of which don't, to life. So thank you so much for sharing all of those snippets of different projects with me.
In many of these projects, I am also able to find connection through a person who was my teacher during that 1 year in Warsaw, but not a mentor then. He taught a course on organology. He is a specialist in the history of musical instruments and tormented me about the technologies of harpsichord manufacturing, and I understood nothing of that. We later reconnected and have become really good friends, and he, also Jewish, which was completely lost on me at the time when I was his student with the name of Benjamin Fogel. He also found his way to Jewish topics and has published some wonderful things about klezmer instruments. Again, with his vast, vast knowledge of history of musical instruments and understanding of the technologies of these instruments, he's able to look at iconographic sources and study the history, the instrumentarium of Jewish bands throughout the historical Polish lands. And his chapter on instruments used by bands which performed in the Jewish Inn is also part of that book.
Perfect. It sounds like you've done a lot of work with archival research, but I'd love to give you a chance to tell me about some of the other methodologies that you typically find yourself turning to. How and why did you develop an appreciation for these?
So the archival method is absolutely the place where I start. I am an archival scholar. This is the place where I go from. Something that catches my attention, something that causes me to generate questions that I cannot answer. And that is absolutely the first place. So in that sense, I am a historian. And there are histories of those communities that absolutely need to be told. For example, what did we know about the music of the progressive communities in 19th century? Did we even know that there were progressive Jewish communities in 19th century Poland or especially Warsaw? So that is the first place where I'm always starting. The other place that is very often for me the starting point is the music itself. There's something in the music that makes me ask questions about style, about choices that the composers have made, about choices that performers have made, about how the sound works, with how it is perceived culturally, how do various groups understand the Jewishness of the sound. So music can be also the starting point for me. Beyond that, the methodology will be what will help me answer the questions. If I need to jump into theoretical framing, if I need to find new analytical methods, if I need to learn a whole discipline outside of musicology, for example, the history of science in a given moment, in a given place, I will do that. In other words, I don't start with the methodology, I start with the questions. The methodology then becomes a tool that helps me find ways to answer those questions.
Excellent. Many scholars celebrate the opportunity to teach others as an extension of their own research pursuits. Can you tell me a little bit about some of your recent lecturing or teaching and how this has contributed to your own research agenda?
So I love working with younger scholars. Being a mentor is really important to me, and I work with scholars who are my doctoral advisees. I also work with scholars who are advisees of my colleagues here if my help is needed and approved by my colleagues. I mentor colleagues outside of this university if I can find myself useful, if they can use my help. I do that in a variety of ways. I will work with colleagues when they submit articles, and I can be helpful in shaping the articles for publication. So that's one place where this is really, really important. I love the conversations. I love learning from what people are doing. I learn a ton when I advise because I have to become as familiar with the material as my advisees. So in the process, I learn usually new music and I learn about the sources that they are using. And we think together through questions of methodologies and how to frame it. And it inspires me in my own research. This is really, really important to me. I also really enjoy outreach to communities outside of academe. So for example, last spring, I was asked by a tiny little library in Brown County, Indiana, 30 minutes from Bloomington, would I come and give a talk? And I loved it. It was a small group of listeners, but they wanted to learn about these things that I'm passionate about. And they were a fantastic, fantastic audience. I gave a couple of lectures in August to at a Jewish genealogy conference where I spoke again to people who are enthusiasts. For the most part, you know, they were drawn into this research by researching their own families. And I met some people who were researching ancestors who were musicians. So all of a sudden, you know, I have learned more about people who are only names on the documents that I have encountered, and their descendants have done all the work to learn more about them. So yes, I mean, these kind of outreach opportunities are immensely important to me, and I will teach anybody who doesn't run away and wants to listen.
That's a great way of putting it. Are there new research questions or subjects that are currently preoccupying you?
There's one project that I would love to find time in Jewish music to work on. My administrative duties are really eating into my research time right now. But the archives of my hometown, whose musical history I have not researched really, are pretty much intact. I have written about the progressive community in Warsaw, but I have not studied the progressive community of Łódź. And I have gotten bits and pieces, just little glimpses of what the sound of that progressive synagogue, again, you know, a place that I walked by several times a week that is now an empty space where this magnificent synagogue stood. And I would love to bring that sound back in a research project. I need a few weeks in the archives. I think I will find things that would help me put that history together. Love to have time to do that. I am also sitting on a pile of archival material that tells the story of constructions of Jewishness in sound and dance around the concept of Mayufes. I used some of that material for that recent chapter that came out last summer, but there is more material and I would really like to go back and tell that story because it's really complex and fascinating and multi-layered. And it brings in perspectives of many communities, Jewish and non-Jewish communities in Poland, using that concept as a shorthand for identity to perpetuate anti-Semitic stereotypes. And also as a kind of as a place for connection between those communities. So it has multi-functions, both on a kind of full spectrum of self-representation on the one and ugly stereotypes on the other. And I would really like to go back to it. I have been able to trace that concept back to the early 19th century.
That's so fascinating. And it also sounds like these potential projects could be the ultimate in homecoming projects, right? And finally bringing your own background into unity with the research in musicology and Jewish studies that you have done. But those sound like really wonderful, powerful projects. There are a couple of sets of questions that I typically ask all the participants on the podcast. The first set is how you understand the field of Jewish music and what issues or challenges with this field of study you think that scholars today need to remain attentive to.
So, the field of Jewish studies in music is defined by the scholars who are doing the work. So, you will get different definitions depending on what story the scholars want to tell. It is clearly engagement of people of Jewish descent, and I'm saying it very carefully, and I will explain in a moment, engagement of people of Jewish descent with music. But what that means and what Jewish descent means is actually quite complicated. I wrote an article for Barbara Kirscherblatt's book on the legacy of Polish Jews, trying to wrap my head around some of those questions in the context of the music that I'm studying. There are people there whose legacy we write into the history of Polish Jewish music who would not have considered themselves Jewish. People, for example, such as Maria Szymanowska, who was born into a Frankist family 2 generations removed from Jacob Frank and a practicing Catholic herself. So, these identities are really quite problematic. Even the question of who is a Polish Jew is problematic because the boundaries in Polish lands were moving so frequently and people, even from the same village, could have had different identities or different identities at different times. And Schenker is a very good example here. We think of him as an Austrian music theorist, but he was actually a Galicianer. He grew up outside of what is today Lviv in Ukraine. He at some point identified with Polish culture to some degree. It is important to remember that his piano teacher was Mikuli, who was Chopin's student. So there is a very strong connection to the Polish pianistic tradition. So, to just slap an identity on Schenker and call him one thing does not give a full picture of the richness of identities. So then what do we do with artists who might have had firmly Jewish identity, whether cultural or religious, whose musical production was not particularly Jewish? For example, Arthur Rubinstein, my landsman from Lodz, but whose connection to what we think of as Jewish music is marginal at best. He was performing music of mainstream Western tradition, and for me, he is one of the best performers of Chopin's music. So I think, the question of identity of both the artist and the identity of the music is complex. And I think it is in the eyes of the beholder of which story you are saying. And I think we need to be very sensitive to the complexity of these questions, to be aware of the particular history of the person, to be aware of the particular history of the communities in a given moment, where the musical genres belonged, and who is writing the history, because that's another thing. I look at documents about some of those artists, and it depends on when they were written, by whom. They take in different view of whether this is Jewish music, whether the creator was Jewish, and so forth. So these are some of the pitfalls. These are both the interesting things, but also they potentially become pitfalls for scholars who are writing about this.
That's an excellent answer. And now for the final set of questions I always ask my participants. Do you believe that there is such a thing as Jewish music or an identifiable Jewish sound? Why or why not? If so, how would you characterize it? And if these questions seem too essentializing, then what questions about the music and sound of Jewish experience would you ask instead?
I think again it's in the eyes or ears of the beholder, and I think how people imagine the Jewish sound is in itself an interesting question. What do we hear as Jewish and why, and what particular history are we narrating, and who is narrating the history tells us what Jewish music is.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. It was such a pleasure to have this opportunity to sit down with you, and I will look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I very much enjoy our conversation, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell my convoluted history.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Jewish podcast.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank our sponsors, the American Society for Jewish Music, the Milken Center for Music of American Jewish Experience at UCLA,
and the University of Kansas Program in Jewish Studies. Tune in next month when I will be joined by Dr. Sarah Boonen-Benor to discuss her ongoing study of global Jewish languages.